And welcome back to Coast, and welcome back to Open Lines. I wanted to share with you my second daughter, Christina. She got engaged a few days ago. She's all excited. Her fiance lives in Calgary, Canada, and they're going to have an interesting shuttle back and forth, but that's what they're going to do. She'll be in St. Louis, he'll be in Calgary, and they shall meet wherever they meet. But she's all excited about that. She called me up and said, Dad, we don't have a date yet, but, you know, we're going to set it, but we don't have a date yet. And this is the kind of dad I am. I said, Christy, before you set the date, make sure you check with me and make sure I'm not on a speaking engagement or some event or doing a taping. And she said, absolutely. That'll be her first criteria. She's got to check with me on the dates first. But she got engaged. And, you know, those of you who are parents to children of that age, it's a great feeling knowing that they're happy and part of their life is taken care of. Those of you who have younger children, you're going to be where I am. Trust me. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your calls. Open lines for the hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. This, by the way, is a weird week. One of our guests yesterday had to cancel. He was out in New York snow shoveling and ripped his shoulder. That's heavy. Snow is heavy. And when you have that much, that's what happened to him. He's out of commission. So he's done. This guest tonight from the United Kingdom, flat phone lines, gone. He's gone. And tomorrow night, Catherine Austin Fitz was scheduled for a couple hours to talk about economic issues. She had to do a forced cancellation. She's got strange week. And by the way, you do know we still do our prayer sessions on Friday, where you send me an email with somebody's name and the reason why, and on the prayer list, unpublished, they go, because people take a little bit out of their time. Don't forget, on Fridays, and do a little prayer or such. And with that, please say a little prayer for our Coast to Coast guest, Jim Sanders. Jim is the author of the downing of TWA Flight 800, and he suffered what they thought was a heart attack. It was not, and he's recuperating in bed 20 to 23 hours a day. Unbelievable. I tried to get him on a couple days ago because they identified another plane part that was not from MH370. They still don't know where that plane is. The Japanese say that they believe it was a missile that they had launched, and it was remnant of that, a piece of that. So I wanted Jim to react to that. He can't do it. So say a little prayer for him, if you would. Anyway, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Dave in Virginia to get our segment started. Hello, David. Welcome to the program.
Well, George, how you doing?
Good,
I'm going to. I heard you earlier talking about you get kind of normal calls during the week. I'm going to end it. I guess I'm going to end that streak.
I love it.
You know, this is a very strange thing for me. I must preface this: I'm not a believer. I don't know if I really can call myself an atheist. I guess I'm agnostic. But my mother has always been a devout Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And
like mine. I bet we have similarities here.
Probably. And my mother is 79 years old right now. And almost 80. And February 26, 2014, she had a massive stroke.
Oh, jeez.
And her neighbor was supposed to go somewhere with her. And I think they were going somewhere together. And she went over and she called me and she couldn't get her to the door, which wasn't unusual for her. And she was hard of hearing, and and she always ran late for everything. So she said, I just think something's wrong. I'm calling 911. And I sort of discouraged her from doing it. I said, I'll come over. So I've got a key. And
probably not too far away, right?
Right, but you know, 5 minutes, 6 minutes away, we're very close, and didn't think much about it. My brother calls me. The neighbor had called him because I guess she was furious with me, and he said, "Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm farther away than Dave is," and so she hung up on him and called 911.
Okay.
Well, they came in, and unfortunately, I mean, her instinct was right. My mother had suffered a massive stroke, and she was in the bathroom floor. She couldn't get up, and they got her out of there to the hospital. It was within an hour she started receiving treatment, and which was, you know, they say is a pretty short amount of time. And my mother never lost consciousness during this whole.
Well, that's not unusual, but for somebody that age, that's pretty good.
Well, and she fell down first in the kitchen. And she gave the blow-by-blow account, and she got in the chair, and she went, and she felt better, and went in the bathroom, and she collapsed again. She had her watch on. She remembered exactly what time it happened. She remembered everything about it. And the doctors didn't give her a lot of hope. It was give us a lot of hope.
So they thought she was going to die right there.
They thought she was going to die. They gave us about 2 hours when we got to the emergency room.
Gosh.
And I asked the nurse standing by her bed, I said, "What do you," when I walked in, I said, "My brother had just gotten there. I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "I think if you got anything to say to her, you better say it right now." And the chaplain came, you know, to the bay and asked if we wanted to talk, and they're asking about DNRs and this and that and everything. I mean, you know, like an hour earlier, when her neighbor called me, I was washing my car and I was getting ready to go pick up my daughter for lunch.
Yeah. Okay.
And everything changed that moment. It was just a shock. But she, she had a rough time in the hospital, but she got better. And
how long was she in the hospital?
She was in the hospital about a week and a half.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah, in intensive care, probably close to a week. And, but she started improving. Her vitals were always good. She never even required oxygen after the first couple of days.
So these doctors are baffled because they thought you'd be dead in 2 hours.
I talked to her neurologist. He said he could not explain why she was still alive a week later. Well, they send her to we're just going to schedule and send her to a rehab center. And because she had lost the movement on her left side.
All right, some of her motor skills.
Right, lost her sight in her eye on that left side.
Could she talk?
Her speech was I mean, just barely. It was very, very difficult to understand. Well, they take her to the rehab center. Within 3 days, her speech, where you couldn't understand a word she said, I'm holding my head, my ear down to her mouth.
Yeah.
You're straining to understand what she's saying. Within 3 days of working with the speech therapist, her speech was completely normal.
That's amazing.
I mean, completely normal. Unbelievable. And she was working, she opted to do physical therapy three times a week. I mean, I'm so sorry, three times a day.
That's amazing.
She was getting movement back on that side with her hand and her shoulder and her foot. The droopiness left her face, her sight came back in that eye, her hearing came back, and the doctor was absolutely cannot explain it. And she remembered everybody's phone number, she remembered everybody's.
Remarkable.
I mean, it was unbelievable by memory. every night, you know, I'd leave the nursing home seeing her. She'd give me a list of things like, you know, this bill needs to be paid. Can you pay it for me? It's $128.96.
She knew all this stuff, huh?
She knew every bill to the penny. She knew where the bill was. If she wanted something from home, to me to bring a few things for, she knew. And my mother never threw out anything. I mean, it was like a museum, you know. National Archives.
Let's jump ahead a little bit here, David. So when they released her, how was she?
Well, they didn't release. Well, so I go to see her. I'm there on a Friday, and she's, you know, giving me her my marching orders, basically, of things she needs for the next day. And yeah, I kissed her on the forehead, and we hugged, and everything was normal. When I went back Saturday, everything had changed. I mean, she's telling me about, I thought she was joking at first. She's telling me about my brother, who we haven't seen in 10 or 11 years at that point, I guess, had been crawling through the window the night before.
Did that happen?
No.
Okay.
No. My grandparent, I know that because he's dead, which I actually found out later. It's a long story, but
unless she saw the spirit, who knows? Huh?
Well, she's talking about my grandparents who have been dead for many years. My father, who's been dead for a decade, and then she starts talking about. And then a few months go by, and is this another stroke? The doctor, you know, they did another CAT scan. No, she didn't have a stroke. I can't explain what's going on, why it happened so suddenly. Well, then a couple months go by, she becomes very violent.
Really?
And this is a little church lady. My mother is 4'11" and probably weighs 100 pounds.
And when you say violent, I mean, what are the things she tried to do?
She has been hitting the nurses. I saw her a couple months ago hit a doctor, and it took three. Now this is, like I said, it's over the size of my mom. And she's been lying in bed for almost 2 years now. About 2 months ago, I saw her hit the doctor, and it took three of us to hold her down.
Jeez.
So the doctor could examine her.
What's happening to her?
George, she is using the most foul language I've ever heard in my life. My mother has never said a vulgar word. My father didn't talk to her around her like that. I don't know where she would come up with such... obviously, I can't repeat.
I hate to say this, but is she possessed?
That's what I am wondering. She uses a different gravelly voice sometimes. She talks about killing people killing her. She says that my 8-year-old daughter was trying to kill her.
Oh,
she
my
was
God.
Possessed.
Well, David, let me tell you, a couple things probably have happened, and we're going to move on before the break. One, she either has suffered, even though you said she had a CAT scan, some kind of brain injury with that stroke that is making her hallucinate like this and become angry and accuse everybody of everything. Or she's possessed. And if she is, and you live out there in Virginia, you got to find an exorcist to come by and get her. I want you to stay in touch with us and check in with me periodically and let me know exactly what's going on. Okay? Now let's go to you, Tom. You got a text for me. We'll take another call, then the break, and then more open lines. What an incredible
story.
Oh, my God.
I think you're right, though. It's one of those two.
It's got to be.
It's got to be. From Clarice in Washington, D.C. George, I just found
you got to get that chair fixed.
What chair?
Your squeaky chair. You've got to get that fixed. Don't you hear that?
I don't hear anything.
When you move? Well, you were talking. You didn't hear it. We did. Danny and I heard it.
I see Dan shaking his head.
Maybe you can oil it. I don't know.
Maybe. So, Clarice.
Dan. He's the operations director. Have him fix it.
Okay, Dan, you know. Clarice in Washington, D.C. I just found the show, George, and this is my second day. I'm very curious, and I want to know if you will please describe for me what I can expect from listening regularly.
Well, I'm not going to tell you what you can expect. All you have to do is listen, and you will find out.
Why did I know you would say that?
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Next up, let's go to Steve in Albany, New York now. Welcome to the program. Steve, thank you. Go ahead.
I got a very short time to talk to you. Nice talking to you again.
You too, Stephen.
Are you a member of the VA?
No, not really. When I retired, but I'm still going strong. Still have health insurance from my company, so I don't need the VA. But
programs.
I support them.
Yeah, there's a lot of programs that the VA might be able to offer you, or you might be able to help with them. I'm a member of the VA.
Okay, great
okay,
people.
Now, here's the thing, and I'm going to do three things and try to put them all together really fast.
Okay, go for it.
Number one, I was on another radio show today, trying to get on another radio show, and I was on hold, and I heard the radio from Houston, Texas, and I realized, okay, when I went to broadcasting school, and I never got a chance. I've been on radio a couple of times, but never got my big chance. Now I realize I got to go to Houston, Texas. They're the only place the radio here is just, it's you, and then it's all format that I can't get into. So I got to go to Houston, Texas, and I'm going to get into broadcasting.
Good for you.
Okay. Now here's the thing: the VA just sent me out a tax form for the IRS.
Okay.
Now, here's what I think. Okay, it's for the Obamacare.
Okay. Yes, I just got mine too from my company.
Okay. Here's the thing about that. If they get your form, okay, they know where you are and they investigate. Okay. Now I was in the VA. I've had counseling, just minor counseling. They ask you, do you feel depressed? Do you feel distressed?
Right.
They test you for PTSD or post-traumatic stress.
Right. Or at least they're trying to.
Right. Now, what that does is it means you got to go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Now with the IRS, the way they're doing it, they're bypassing the HEPA, and they can see if you've had any type of psychological problems.
That's right.
And Obama's pushing for confiscating guns from anybody that's had psychological problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can bust down my door, and even though I'm not armed, and I shouldn't say that on the radio, but even though I'm not armed, they can come in and they can search my house looking for arms. They can go for searching everybody's arms.
Just by the mere fact of some of these admissions and these tests.
Well, no, for the VA form.
Through
that's
the form.
The VA forms. Yeah, that's what it's to tell the Obamacare people that the IRS. It's, you've had psychological problems, and now they can remember that.
You're very astute to see that, Steve. Not a lot of people do see it, but it's their way. It's that mechanism to get to you, to get your guns and God knows what else. Nothing like Paul Anka, huh? Hey, still 50 tickets left now. Big Bear Lake, California, first weekend in Feb. Just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, look at the highlight reel, click that, come on out. Stanton Friedman will be there, Jason Martell, Mike Barra, Chase Klotsky, Micah Hanks, and Tom Danheiser. We're going to have a meet and greet panel. It's just going to be a great weekend out there in Big Bear Lake, California, at the convention center. Just come out and have some fun. Now, we're going to come back in a moment and have some fun with you, with final open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines here, final segment. And let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana, who's been on hold for quite a while. Boy, you would wait for me forever, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you and Tommy there, and all the Coast to Coast listeners and callers. I'm glad that guy called in about the VA and stuff, and that's what I was telling Tommy about. And let me say this one thing. Happy Mardi Gras to all you people. Laissez les bon temps rouler. Let the good times roll. George, you and Tommy and the rest of the crew are going to have to make it. Maybe this will be our last Mardi Gras, maybe next year, but y'all going to have to come to Mardi Gras. All
when is it exactly?
Okay, it started last weekend, and it goes till February the 9th. That's Fat Tuesday.
God,
that's a big day.
I can't get there.
I know. Maybe next year.
If I were in St. Louis, it might have been easier.
Yeah, maybe next year. We might have one more year left. But anyway, the VA here at Alexandria, Louisiana, we've been fighting them for 10 years, and they've been essentially killing our vets and stuff. But we can't get no coverage. We can't get none. But now there's a VA director. They're sending from y'all's place in California to Louisiana and Texas. So finally our delegation's gotten together because the vets are complaining. And what they did, this VA McDougal, she lied on the stand and stuff about these wait times and stuff in California. So they're sending her to be in charge of the VA hospitals in Louisiana. And,
oh, jeez.
Now, that's something. I mean, she lied to Congress.
It's like the Peter principle, right? They just keep promoting.
Yeah, I don't know. And so I just hope our listeners and stuff will, you know, do something and stuff like that. And I had a show idea, and I'm going to get off the air to let somebody else get on. I told Tommy it'd be good for you to have, like, a night where correctional officers, police officers, military police, any kind of security personnel, just call in with their stories, whether they be UFO stories or strange stories that happened to them, and just an idea and stuff, or have inmates even call in. Because the inmates and stuff and correctional officers and police, we all listen to you.
Oh, inmates, it's huge, huge. I've got a friend of mine who was a young African-American, Cornelius, and did some foolish things. You know, he was raised. He didn't have a father figure, he was in jail, and they let him out. And then in his adult life, because he's like 50 now, he was not supposed to possess a firearm. That was part of the deal. And his neighbor turned him in. He had a gun. And they took him away for 7 years. He just got out, but he said that he would listen to me every night in jail, every night. And the guy's got a heart of gold.
Yeah. Well, like I said, things happen, George. I'm trying to get my name cleared. I thank y'all for, you know, trying to help me and stuff. So
I hope that works out.
God bless y'all, and thank you so much.
Hey, say
God's gun and gold and Bible bullets.
That's it. That's why I like that. I like that when you close like that. Tom, you got a text message for us? Let's see what you got. Final one.
What does he say again? I didn't quite...
Guns, Bibles, beans, and something else.
Connor in North Dakota writes in, texts in, actually. I have a 17-year-old who just told me she tried marijuana for the first time. I'm really thinking of sending her away for a while. And, George, I know you're a parent. What should I do?
Well, 17, I don't think you want to send her away for that. It's not an easy decision as a parent. We've all gone through that. I happen to believe that that pot is not as addictive as they tell you.
Mm-hmm.
It's more medicinal, quite frankly. But at the same time, she's 17 years old, for crying out loud. She's got peer problems and peer pressure. You just got to monitor her. You know, she will grow out of these things eventually, where she becomes an adult and a, you know, wonderful young woman. But sending her away is not going to do it.
But isn't the danger that she might not grow out of it and grow more into drugs?
This is what I learned after raising three kids. You got to get a new chair. You got to put one in, right? Is that a new chair or an old chair?
It's new. They put it in a few weeks ago. I will take care of it.
You got to talk to them about that. They got to oil it or something. It's driving Danny nuts here, and he's in charge.
I think it's driving you nuts.
It's driving us both nuts. Is it driving you nuts, Danny? Yeah.
Like he's going to say no.
And it's driving him nuts. But eventually, they become great adults. You just got to make sure they don't hurt themselves as a parent. Other than that, you really can't tell them what to do. You can't take away every privilege. I bought my granddaughter a car when she was 16, Ari, and she had some tough times. You know, she dated a couple guys at 17 and 18, and her mother didn't like them, and I didn't like them, and I wasn't there all the time. But everybody wanted me to give up on her, take the car away, punish her. I didn't, you know. I would sit down with her as her grandfather. She, you know, doesn't get along with her dad. And she straightened out. She's in her third year of college. You know, she's almost got her degree in hotel management. The guys she dates are pretty darn good. She straightened herself out.
Did you give her the car before she had problems?
Well, she was 16, but, you know, these things developed, you know.
Well, see, I was thinking you got it for as an incentive to straighten
up. No, it was just something I wanted to do for her. It was a little tiny Honda. And, you know, she, I got to tell you, she's a wonderful young woman right now. You know, you've met her.
All your kids are great.
You know, so she's, but getting back to his question, you really can't tell them what to do. They're going to do it anyway. And so what you want to do is be their friend and you know, let them know they can come to you and make up their own minds and grow, you know, cut deals with them. You know, if you're gonna go drink and you're underage, I can't stop you, but you're not going to drive. That's the deal. You call me, you get a cab, you call Uber, but you don't drive. And, you know, those things help, you know, because you're making life safer for them and for somebody else. I'm preaching here.
No, but what if you tell them you drink, you're not getting your license? Isn't that kind of an incentive? And again, I don't know because I'm not a father, but you are.
You know, I was never the one to do. Look, to my oldest daughter at 16, we shipped her from St. Louis to Detroit when my sister took care of her. We put her in a Catholic school. We couldn't handle things, and I'm not sure that was the right thing to do. She turned out fine, but the second one was a little better. I mean, I remember coming home one night from a TV show I produced, and our garage door was open and the car was gone. And I said, "Boy, this is weird." I go in the house, and my second daughter, the one who just got married, she was 13, was joyriding. She found her mother's keys, and off she went. The cops who knew me called me. They said, "George, we got your daughter here on the side of the road." And I said, "Take her, put her in jail. Put her in jail for the night. Watch her, you know."
You did?
And that's what they did. They kept her in jail for the night. She came out the next day. "How could you do that?" And I said, "How could you do that?" And never had a problem with her again. We put her in Catholic school. My son, who was a gem, we put him in Catholic school, and the first thing he said when we told him he was going to John F. Kennedy High School in St. Louis, "Dad, I haven't done anything wrong."
That's funny.
So, but I mean, the bottom line is you got to be their friends, you got to be there so they don't get hurt, but you can't tell them what to do.
Well, I hope Connor's as lucky as you, because I do know that all your kids, I've met them, and they're wonderful.
Let's go to Les in Alaska, west of the Rockies. Hello, Les.
Good evening, George. Thank you for having me on.
You
and,
too.
You know, I just learned tonight that you're a veteran, and, you know, having served in whatever wartime or peacetime you did.
Peacetime for me. I didn't see any action, but I served 9 years.
You volunteered.
Yep.
So, you know, I've been listening for 10 years, and I never knew that, so... Off and on again, I just got to say that congratulations on your daughter and the conversation that you just had about parenting. That's just really hard for any parent. But congratulations on your daughter and
thank you.
Finding the man of her dreams. So I got to talk about the woman on the cell with the talking about the not having the... not plugging your cell phone in.
Yeah.
We all plug our cell phones in to charge them by our heads.
We do. We want to reach over in the morning when somebody calls us and you grab your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and especially a man of your stature, you know, you have to answer your phone at that hour, I imagine. But when I was in Iraq, I tell you, I was in a power plant in Iraq, and someone told me that if I pulled my fluorescent light bulb out of my shoe to go to the power plant with the light bulb, and I had this like long fluorescent light bulb in my hand.
You're just holding it.
Yes, and walked under the power lines. And in Iraq, they just wire their electricity up. They just it's not as controlled as it is here in the States. And it would light up like a lightsaber, like in Star Wars.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and so if you can walk under a power line and your light bulb lights up like that, you're just holding a light bulb, then what that woman was talking about plugging your cell phone in, must be true.
Yeah, I think it is true.
There's some sort of connection there. If there's a static connection where you don't have to plug it in, the light bulb will light up on its own, then plugging your cell phone in must have some sort of something. Like.
Did it make a noise when you were doing that? With like a buzzing sound?
No, there was no noise. It just glowed. It glowed in the dark, like a green fluorescent light.
Was it really bright?
No, it wasn't that bright, but it wasn't like the brightness that you would plug into your wall and plug in a light bulb.
Right.
But it was bright enough that like the people that in it was bright though. It was bright.
Well, and you know those signals are going right through your body too.
So what I was saying though is exactly what you're saying now, is that it's all around us. Like, obviously, if you can bring a light bulb underneath power lines and it lights up and you're not plugging it in, then there must be some sort of connection.
Yeah, that's bizarre, but you're absolutely right.
Anyways, I also have to congratulate you and thank you for your service, and thank you for having me on tonight.
Thank you, and you too. And served in Iraq, that's not easy.
It was not easy, and I hope to see you sometime to talk about it.
Okay, my friend, be well.
And also on the open lines.
Yeah, what do you think?
Randomly, when you have an open line on a random night, not planned, you don't tell people about it. Just open lines. You have people calling in that normally wouldn't call in.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm fine with that. I like them. I like it indeed, and especially too. You know. As you know, I'll take an occasional Friday off once in a while because I'm traveling to these different venues and things like that. We got a couple more coming up in February. So this gives me a chance to do open lines when I'm not here on a Friday. But you do get different kinds of calls because you do get the spooky and the supernatural and the strange on a Friday, which is cool. I love that. But you get some pretty darn good calls during the week. Let's go to Linda in Bloomington, Illinois. Hello, Linda. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Here's a little tip for the people that are out there shoveling snow.
Okay.
Spray your shovel with Pam.
The olive oil spray or whatever that stuff is, huh?
In a spray can.
Yeah.
Spray Pam and your snow will not stick to it.
That's a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
How many times do you have to spray it? Just once?
Just cover it both sides. And your snow will not stick to that shovel.
You could cook the snow with that, almost.
Anyhow.
Did you ever eat yellow snow when you were a kid?
No, I did not.
All right.
Good. I was stupid, but I wasn't that stupid. Okay, here's the second thing. On my TV, and you had a commercial here a little while ago on, they got a class action lawsuit against Monsanto Roundup.
For the Roundup herbicide, yep.
Yes, have you heard that?
Oh, yeah, I sure have.
Okay, they got that class action. And then number three, I heard a clip of it, not a lot, on TV, something about the wounded warriors aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing.
What do you mean they're not doing what they should be doing?
Well, they're not helping the people for some reason.
Really?
Some guy called, maybe it was on a radio. Anyway, some guy called in, and he was saying that him and several of his friends were not getting the help that they needed from Wounded Warrior.
All right, I'll have Tommy check into that part.
Yeah. And then can I talk to Tommy? Because I want to tell you something, but I don't want to tell it on the air.
All right, I'll put you on hold. Okay?
All right.
Thanks, Linda. I'll take one or two more calls. Annie in Alabama, welcome to the show. Hello, Annie.
Thank you so much, George. You know, we have many states that are a disaster area.
Yep.
Because of the floods of Christmas Day. And one thing that people have failed to tell FEMA, which makes billions of dollars worth of difference, is they forget to tell emergency management and FEMA how much it costs to replace topsoil washed away and income lost by topsoil washed away, such as no crops for the next 50 years. I think it's trillions of dollars.
Sure.
I've never seen so much water damage in my whole life. I hope that they will extend the deadline so people can get this in, because people have been damaged that have never had experience with this before.
And my same daughter, the one who got engaged, had $75,000 in damage to her townhouse in St. Louis from the floods. Now, she had flood insurance, thank God. But, I mean, that's horrible for people to have to go through.
Thank you for helping to put that link up there for Save Annie's Birds. I appreciate that.
You love birds, don't you?
I love those little darlings. That's just my eyeball.
Well, let's save the birds, Annie. Save the birds. You know, anybody who loves animals, okay in my book, let me tell you. We've got some more great shows for you for the rest of the week. My gosh, we're moving into Wednesday already, and then next week we're in the February. This year is going to go by faster than last year. Unbelievable. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.